Welcome to our listeners. You're tuning in to a special podcast interview brought to you by the Reading Muslims Project. I'm your host, Yusuf Sufi, postdoctoral fellow at the University of Toronto's Institute of Islamic Studies. The Reading Muslims Project is a Connaught Global Challenge recipient. Its mandate is to interrogate the place of textuality within Islamic studies. One of its hubs, or areas of focus, is Islamophobia and state surveillance. To this end, we have with us today Dr. Juliette Galonier, assistant professor at the Center for International Research at Sciences Po Paris. Dr. Galonier's research focuses on the construction of racial and religious identities within Muslim minority contexts, including the US and France. Dr. Galonier has kindly agreed to answer our questions today to shed light on the political climate in France surrounding Islam and Muslims in the wake of the Samuel Paty murder of last month. In particular, she will shed light on how recent events have affected French academics working on Islam and Muslims like herself. Dr. Galonier, welcome.
Thank you very much, Youssef, for your very kind invitation and introduction.
Well, we're very excited to have you with us. I hope you don't mind if I call you Juliette throughout the interview.
No worries. You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, sounds good. Now, I'd like to begin by fleshing out the context in France, by fleshing out the latest occurrences. On October 16th, there was a fairly horrific murder that took place in a suburb of Paris. History teacher by the name of Samuel Paty was killed, murdered by a Muslim immigrant from the Chechen region of Russia named Abdullah Anzarov. And since that time, are you able to tell us the reactions within French society, the reactions from the president, what you're seeing in the media, what you're feeling on the streets in different protests, etc.?
Yes, well, first of all, I have to stress that the atrocious murder of Samuel Paty on October 16th took place in a context that was already very tense in France. Since September 2020, we are in the midst of the trial of the January 2015 attacks on Charlie Hebdo and a Jewish supermarket, which claimed 17 lives. So although the main perpetrators of the attacks are dead, their alleged accomplices are currently being tried. So it's a very important trial. It has been postponed last week because of COVID-19, but it was expected to last 50 days. The proceedings are being recorded. There are at least 200 interested parties to the trial, including friends, families. A lot of witnesses have shared horrific details about how the victims were killed. So it's a highly emotional moment for France. With the opening of the trial, Charlie Hebdo also decided to republish some of the caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad. And in the aftermath of that, an 18-year-old Pakistani boy tried to stab and badly injured two passerbys close to the former Charlie Hebdo building in Paris. We are also 2 days away from the fifth anniversary of the November 2015 attacks in Paris, which claimed 130 lives. So the memories of 2015 are already here in French society, and it's a difficult moment for everyone. So that's the first element of context. Second, on October 2nd, so 2 weeks before the assassination of Samuel Paty, Emmanuel Macron had already made a speech in which he announced a future draft bill to fight against what he calls separatisms. So although he used the term separatisms in plural form in his speech, it became very clear during his discourse that he was exclusively directed towards what he termed Islamist separatism. So according to Emmanuel Macron, we are witnessing in France a multiplication of what he called Islamist enclaves, specifically in the working class immigrant majority neighborhoods in the outskirts of Paris, where supposedly the laws of the Republic no longer prevail and are being replaced by Islamic law. So he talked in his speech of the existence of a deliberate ideological political religious project aiming at the development of a counter society where secularism, gender equality, and individual freedom no longer exist. So in his speech, he made sure to mention that the law was not against Islam as a religion, but against Islamist separatism specifically. But in practice, the series of measures that he and the Minister of the Interior announced are quite worrisome for the freedom of conscience and the freedom of association of Muslim citizens in France, because these measures that they announced early October include a tighter control over associations, specifically the finances of these associations, also an extension of the criteria against which the government can dissolve an association. It also includes the end of homeschooling for children in order to prevent the religious indoctrination of children. It involves a tighter control over private religious schools. It involves an increased surveillance of places of worship to ensure they do not convey radical ideas or ideas that are hostile to the Republic. It includes an obligation for the employees of private companies who provide public services, such as transportation companies, to be religiously neutral, so possibly a future ban on religious symbols for these employees. It also includes the construction, with the help of the state, of what Emmanuel Macron called an enlightened French Islam, an Islam des Lumières, which means freeing Islam from what he called foreign influences. So this is the end of foreign imams preaching in France, specifically during the month of Ramadan. And this is also a tighter control on the funding of mosques and places of worship. So this is here, the parliamentary debates on this bill as supposed to take place during the year 2021. So we were already expecting a saturation of the media debate with the topic of Islam and Islamism specifically. I remind you that we are 2 years away from the 2022 presidential election, and Emmanuel Macron needs to appear very tough on Islam if he wants to beat his opponents from the far right. So this is here, and then the horrific assassination of Samuel Paty took place on October 16th. We are talking of the beheading of a history professor by an 18-year-old man who was not even his student. Anzorov learned about the freedom of speech class of Samuel Paty through social media after a social media campaign launched by some parents, aided by some activists, who asked for Samuel Paty to be fired because he had shown the caricatures to his students in class. So the whole chain of events is a complete disaster. Then it was followed on October 29th by another gruesome attack in the Basilica of Nice, during which three persons, three Catholics, were also killed by a Tunisian immigrant. So this is the context. There is a succession of events that led to terrible emotion, moral panic, and anxiety among the French public, which is understandable. What is less acceptable is the reaction of the elites of this country, who have really added fuel to the fire, if I can say, by conducing to a complete historization of the public debate in France, and which this also led to an acceleration of the measures that had been announced by Macron on October 2nd. So there has been a number of measures that have been taken. A mosque in the suburbs of Paris has been closed for at least 6 months because one of the main organizer of the mosque had shared on Facebook some of the posts related to the social media campaign against Samuel Paty before he was assassinated. There has also been the dissolution of three associations. The collective Shah Yassin, whose founder was really involved directly in the social media campaign against Samuel Paty. The association Baraka City, which is a humanitarian association that has nothing to do with the affair, but which, according to the Ministry of the Interior, is supporting radical Islam. So the lawyers of the association said they would appeal the the decision, but the association is dissolved. It no longer exists. And the dissolution of the Grey Wolves, which is an ultra-nationalist paramilitary Turkish groups in support of Erdogan. Then the government also talked about the possibility of dissolving the CCIF, which is the Collective Against Islamophobia in France, on the alleged ground that it promotes Islamism in the country. The government has not carried out that threat yet, but it is really worrisome because the CCIF is an organization that provides legal support to victims of Islamophobia in France, and which has been doing very important work in that respect. Two other things, the government conducted around 100 searches in a series of organizations and individual homes. The Minister of the Interior said that the searches had nothing to do with the ongoing investigation of Samuel Paty's murder, but he said that he wanted to show strength and send a message to, I quote, the enemies of the Republic, which sounds more like the discourse of a mafia don than the Minister of the Interior of the Democratic Government. And finally, I must also mention that in the aftermath of the attack and the tribute that was paid to Samuel Paty in every French school, a dozen of minors, including 10-year-old pupils, are currently under judicial investigation for so-called glorification of terrorism, either because they did not respect the 1 minute silence in tribute of Samuel Paty, or because they said provocative statements such as fact that he deserved to die, etc., etc. But we are talking about minors who are, you know, probably acting out of shock, of provocation or rebellion. But this criminalization of the speech of minor is extremely worrying. So to answer your question, there is a complete authoritarian turn in France, which is unfortunately not surprising because it happens after every terrorist attack.
Juliette, I really appreciate all the detail that you gave in your answer. If I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that the surveillance measures were already going forth before the murder actually occurred. It was a result of Macron's speech, I think you said October 2nd, saying that tackle Islamist separatism. So it's almost as though the occurrence of the murder of Samuel Paty was this focal point for measures that were already underway.
Absolutely. And the murder led to an acceleration of these measures.
Okay. Juliette, I had actually neglected to mention to our listeners that the murderer of Samuel Paty had claimed to be doing so to defend the honor of Muhammad because Samuel Paty had shown caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad. And you touched upon that in your answer. I'm wondering, in thinking about these measures of the Macron government, is there any indication that Muslims in France are against Western values, however we want to construe that, or against freedom of expression in particular? Thinking about your answer and Macron's worry about Islamist separatism, is there any indication that this is a reality, or would you say that it really is a political move on the part of Macron to prevail over his opponents like Marine Le Pen?
So over the past decades, as you know, there has been a succession of violent events committed in the name of Islam against a variety of cultural or literary productions that were mocking, criticizing, or insulting Islam and the Prophet Muhammad. It started with the Rushdie affair in 1989, then the murder of the controversial Dutch director Theo van Gogh in 2004, the Danish cartoons affair in 2005, and then the Charlie Hebdo attack in 2015. So as you mentioned, these attacks were committed by people who claimed to be avenging the Prophet Muhammad. So these are the facts of, you know, these attacks took place. Now, the overwhelming majority of European Muslims have obviously condemned these attacks. And the number of social science studies that we have about Muslims in Europe and France specifically show that Muslims strongly believe in the so-called Western values or the values of the Republic. Muslims were present during the public rallies that followed the attack on Charlie Hebdo, even though many of them did not know about Charlie Hebdo or had never heard about the caricatures before. I must also stress, by the way, that Muslims have also been victims of the attack. I'm thinking specifically of a Muslim police officer, Ahmed Mourabet, who was killed by the Kouachi brothers after they left the Charlie Hebdo building. So there is no indication that Muslims are against freedom of speech or they are more intolerant than other religious groups in France and in Europe more broadly. But it is true that Muslims, and not only Muslims, I have to say, in France, have also been worried by the canonization of the Charlie Hebdo caricatures as a new Republican symbol and as a new Republican totem, I should say. We are in a moment where your enthusiasm for the caricatures of Charlie Hebdo has become the standard against which your belonging to the French nation and to civilization more broadly is being measured, which is quite ironic, by the way, when you think of the very identity of Charlie Hebdo as a journal, which always presented itself as subversive, countercultural, provocative, and which is now being embraced as the new embodiment of French official identity. It's very ironic to see a journal, a hardcore secularist leftist journal who defines itself as strongly anti-clerical, being embraced as this new sacred symbol of the French Republic, so much so that it has become almost blasphemous to criticize the caricatures today. So Muslims have been worried about that because it is problematic in a way to give such national symbolic importance to a series of caricatures that are mocking a religion at a moment where these very religious groups that is being mocked and criticized is also victims of social inequality, discrimination, marginalization, and stigmatization in France. So yes, it is understandable that Muslim believers do not jump for joy when they see a caricature of their prophet naked or sometimes represented with certain physical features that also echo the way Jews were represented in the 1940s. So there's a problematic aspect to these caricatures as well. But again, I have to say that, you know, Charlie Hebdo defines itself as bête et méchant, nasty and stupid. They do not pretend to be anything else. And over 30 years, Charlie Hebdo has been sued by a number of organizations. There were 50 trials against Charlie Hebdo, mostly conducted by organizations on the far right, Catholic organization, other media outlets, and a fraction of Muslim organizations in 2007. And even then, the Muslim organization who sued Charlie Hebdo only focused on two caricatures that they deemed racist because of the phenotypical features of the people who were represented there, but they did not attack them for the entire caricatures or for the very idea of caricaturing the Prophet Muhammad. So I think the main thing to stress here is that freedom of speech should be universal, and it means that you should have the right to caricature the Prophet without being killed or sued for it. But it also means that we have the right to say that we dislike the caricatures, that we feel offended by the caricatures. We have the right to debate over the political implication of caricaturing Muhammad at the moment where the Muslim minority is already experiencing all sorts of institutional and symbolic marginalization without being accused of justifying terrorism and without being pushed outside the boundaries of the French nation. And it is true that many Muslims today, especially among the youth, feel that their freedom of speech is being curtailed and that their discourse is monitored, scrutinized, and surveilled.
Yeah, I really like how you point out that a big element of the pushback from Muslim communities is around the racialization of Muslims and the stereotypes that caricatures generate about Muslims. Even back in the 90s with the Rushdie affair, I remember the best types of academic analyses around controversies of freedom of speech highlighted elements of post-coloniality, elements of racialization, elements of integration as being a lot more important than simply religious dogma or simply religious offense at freedom of expression. It was not so much a question of freedom of expression as much as a question of relations of power. And that gets me. That leads me to my next question, which is, and I'll preface it by saying that, you know, watching all of this from North America, I don't have all the details that you have. I don't have exposure to all the media that you have. But the language that I hear from Macron, the language that I hear in the media resonates with what I remember during the post 9/11 era, where on the one hand, you have this sense of national injury, that the nation has been attacked. You also have this sense of our values being under attack. And you have the same discourse of the radical Muslim and the moderate Muslim. And like you said, Macron's not going after, he's not saying I'm going after Islam. He's not saying I'm going after Muslims. He's saying Islamist separatists. There's a particular group that he's singling out. I've heard in some interviews, people mention Salafism. I've heard in some interviews, people mention the Muslim Brotherhood. In my experience, these terms, and I think you've already pointed this out, they're very slippery. And so, you know, you try to target one group, but, you know, how do you exactly identify that group? Does that include a group that fights against Islamophobia in general? Like you said, might be it's a group that might be targeted. And one difference between the post 9/11 context and the French context is the number of Muslims within France. There is a very large percentage of the French population that is Muslim. And also different from the 9/11 context, a lot of those Muslims socioeconomically are on the margins of society. They live in the banlieues. And what does this new rhetoric, these new measures, this new discourse, what does it do for them? Does it undercut the aspiration in France of having equal opportunity for all citizens?
Yes, thank you. These are very important elements. So you're right, the Muslim minority is very large. It represents 9% of the population, close to 6 million people, as opposed to the American Muslim population, which makes up less than 1% of American population. So it's a very large population, you're right. It's a population mostly coming from a post-colonial immigrant background, and that tends to belong to working class sectors of society. So it's important to understand when talking about Islam in France that there is this concatenation of issues that are clearly intertwined. So there is this issue of immigration, post-colonial trauma, the traumas of the Algerian war, which is not sufficiently discussed. There's this aspect of class and also spatial relegation. And then there is, in contrast to the American context, the specific institution of French secularism, which we call laïcité. And I think this is also very important to understand for a North American audience that the history of church-state relations in France has been extremely violent, and the French Republic, the French nation state, really built itself against the Catholic Church, which explains why religion in general, not only Islam, but religion in general, is perceived as a threat to the French polity. And there's a very strong tradition of anti-clericalism, specifically on the French left, which sees religion as a threat to emancipation and equality. So this is there, and this can also help to explain some unexpected alliances among people in France. For instance, you saw that during the 2004 ban on religious symbols, including the headscarf in French public school, where you had an alliance of people from the far right who are xenophobic, racist, Islamophobic, people on the right who wanted to protect Catholic identity, but also people on the left who were extremely vocal in their support for the ban, not because they are racist, but because they are against any religion and they are against the public visibility of religion in France. So this is, I think, very important to understand. Now, concerning the impact of the current context for Muslims, this is indeed a very important problem, I think, especially the attacks on freedom of association for young Muslims. There is a number of very interesting research conducted by some colleagues which demonstrate that it is through their involvement in associations, including Muslim associations, religious associations, that people in France, Muslim citizens of France, find a path toward integration, and this is how they participate in the civic life of the nation. So it is very important that these associations stay open, and when the government is talking about dissolving the CCIF, this sends a very strong message to this youth, saying that your participation to the public sphere is no longer welcome. The other aspect, I think, which is very worrisome, is this discourse on separatism and the suspicion of so-called Islamist enclaves or the project of the Islamist conquest of France. So there is today a form of conspiracy theory coming from above, coming from the elites, sometimes supported by academic research by some scholars, according to which dangerous Islamists are planning to overthrow the French Republic from within by becoming very active in associations, in local organizations, etc., etc., etc. So again, this type of discourse really prevents the participation of Muslims to public life, because whenever there is a Muslim person who is visibly Muslim, who involves himself or herself as a Muslim in the French public sphere, he or she is accused of having a hidden agenda. And so it becomes very complicated to talk as a Muslim in the French public debate today, because this suspicion is always here. You see very, very clearly with the example of this brave young woman whose name is Mariam Pouchetou. She's the vice president of one of the most important student unions in France, UNEF. She is a Muslim and she wears the headscarf. She's very active in defending the rights of students, all students, especially during these times of pandemic. And whenever she makes a public appearance, she's being accused of promoting Islamism through her headscarf. In fact, recently she went to the French National Assembly for a hearing on the effects of the COVID-19 crisis on young people. And four MPs from Macron's political party decided to leave the room because they were offended by the very presence of a Muslim woman wearing headscarf. So this is the moment we are in, and I am indeed quite worried about the consequences of this, of the position of the government for Muslim youth in this country.
With the time that we have left, Juliette, I'd like to ask you, how have the events in France in the last month affected academics working on Islam and Muslims? How has it affected you, your colleagues, your ability to do research, the way that you're perceived when you do your research? I think considering our listenership is going to be an academic audience, they're probably curious to know what their colleagues are going through.
Yeah, so in the aftermath of the attacks, there have been a number of declarations, specifically by the French Minister of Education, who accused some parts of academia of being complacent towards or even complicit with terrorism. So he made a number of very controversial statements where he accused academics of intellectual complicity with terrorism, and he talked about Islamo-gauchisme, so Islamo-leftism, which is supposedly wreaking havoc in French university. He said, I'd like to just quote his sentence because I think it's interesting. He said, "There is a fight to be waged against an intellectual matrix coming from American universities and intersectional faces that want to essentialize community and identities. It is the breeding ground for a fragmentation of society that converged with Islamist interests. So he's accusing parts of French academia of using North American theories, including critical race studies, intersectionalities, whiteness studies, Islamic studies, in order to portray France in a specific light. And according to him, this leads to a division of French societies, which eventually provide a breeding ground for Islamism in France. So these are very strong accusations. Again, this is not new. Macron made the same accusation in June when we were having debates about racism and police violence. He also said that the academic world has been guilty. It has encouraged the ethnicization of social issues, which has led to fractures within the Republic. So we are at a very interesting moment where this is no longer racism itself, which is accused of fracturing the Republic, but people who talk about racism, who study it, are associations who are currently denouncing it. So there's a number of interesting things in this declaration. The word Islamo-leftist, which is a very vague accusation that is targeted at pretty much everyone who is studying racism, studying Islamophobia, and who is accused of being complicit with terrorism. The association or the fear of North American theories invading French academia, I think, is also very interesting to study, not only because it ignores that North American concept when they are, carefully applied, can be very useful to understand the empirical reality of France, but it also ignores the fact that there is a Francophone French tradition of studying race and whiteness with France Fanon and Colette Guillaumin and many other authors who have already contributed to the study. Anyway, so this is happening. This is not surprising on the part of this government, who is also leading a reform of the university that is a complete disaster in terms of job security, funding, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not surprising. What is more surprising to me is the cultural war and the internal divide that is taking place within French academia itself. And to me, this is a matter of concern, because after the Minister of Education talked about the challenge of Islamo-leftism in French academia, there was a manifesto that was signed by over 100 French intellectuals, which say that they agreed with the Minister of Education that there was a problem with the proliferation of critical race studies, postcolonial studies within French universities, which according to them equates to the promotion of anti-white racism within French universities. So they wrote this manifesto, and they also asked the French Ministry of Education to clearly oppose those ideologies and to establish a body that would be responsible for reporting cases of teachers and colleagues who teach those so-called North American ideologies. So this is a very worrisome statement, where you have some academics who are basically advocating for nothing less than a witch hunt within French universities. So this has been obviously criticized. There was a very swift and sharp response by thousands of academics, including international academics, who have expressed their support, saying that this was a terrible attack on the very principle of academic freedom. And this was also a complete mischaracterization of what critical race studies, intersectionality, whiteness studies, Islamic studies are meant to do. So there has been this response, but this profound cultural divide within French academia is really a matter of concern. And I think it would be interesting to study it, to have PhD candidates working on that, on the trajectories of this intellectuals, on the intellectual divides on the topic of Islam and secularism within French academia itself.
So we'll tell our audience, if anybody is a master's student and they're interested in that topic, they could perhaps apply to work at Sciences Po, or at least work overseas doing ethnographic work within the French Academy. it would be.
Yeah, that would be terrific. And it is very much needed. We need to understand where these statements come from.
But where are we at right now then? So we've had these threats from the Minister of Education, and we've had this support from the an international community of scholars. Where are we at, and what do you foresee coming? Are you worried that the statements from the Minister of Education are going to materialize, or that the mobilization against it is going to succeed?
I still have some confidence in the institutions of this country. Just to give you an example, so there is currently a law that is being debated to reform university and research in France. And a week ago, a number of people at the Senate asked for a new amendment to be introduced that conditions the exercise of academic freedom to the respect of the values of the Republic. Fortunately, that amendment did not pass because it was deemed unconstitutional. And so it was reaffirmed that academic freedom is unconditional and it should be like freely exercised in France. So that did not pass. But it is true that the climate is very difficult. A number of critical race studies scholars are being harassed on social media. One of them, at least, Eric Fassin, has received death threats. There is also a case of a colleague, Farhad Khosrokava, who published a piece that was very severe, criticizing French secularism as a new religion that is oppressing minority. So that piece, which we may or may not agree with, was published on Politico, the website Politico, but very shortly after it has been removed following pressure from hardcore secularists in France. So that piece was removed without informing the author. So this is very worrisome again, because you may or may not agree with Farhad Khosrokava's interpretation, but the important thing is that we have the possibility for debate, and when the piece is removed, there is no longer possibility for debate. I also know of a conference on Islam and Islamism, which was meant precisely to question those complex worlds of Salafism, Islamism, etc., and which was organized within a specific ministry of France, within a certain ministry. This conference has been cancelled because of COVID-19, but also because there was a fear among people at the ministry that they might be in a difficult position because the conference was at odds with the current government's orientation. So this is there. There's no direct threat yet, but the general climate is very difficult, and many of my colleagues have refrained from going on the media to talk to journalists, because we know that in the current context there is no space to express a nuanced point of view on these issues.
All right, so a final question for you. Since we academics in North America have contributed to the French theory that is now under attack, how can we support you? How can we support our French colleagues in this climate, in this time, support their academic freedom?
Well, thank you very much for the offer. First, for the invitation. I think, I mentioned following the manifesto of the 100 intellectuals in France, there was also an op-ed published by Alana Lentin and a number of other colleagues that really reasserted the necessity to help the protection of academic freedom in France. So that was much welcome to see this international support. Then I think there are two other aspects. The first one is funding. So I would not say that there is a lack of funding for research on Islam in France, but this funding often comes from the government or from government agencies, which means that researchers who apply to that money have to work with categories that were developed by the state, such as radicalization. Now, myself, including, and other colleagues have benefited from that money. So it's always money that is good to take. But it is true that we need more independent sources of funding so that we can develop our own research question and not be dependent on concepts or categories that were developed by the state. I did not mention that Macron, in his speech on October 2nd, also talked about the need to create a French Institute of Islamic Studies because he wants independent French research, independent from North American theories. So he wants to put funding into research on Islam. But again, there is fear that this is going to lead to the development of state research on Islam that is conditioned on the political interests of the state, which is a problem. So we need independent source of funding. So if you can support PhD candidates, there are many brilliant researchers in France, but also elsewhere, who are working on Islam in France. They have terrible working conditions, no job security. They work as underpaid adjuncts in universities. So if there can be any funding for these studies, that would be fantastic. And then the last aspect, I think, is a call for comparative research. We need foreign scholars who study France in comparison with other contexts and who do solid empirical research on France. A lot of time when I read the US newspapers or American commentators who are talking about the French situation, I feel that sometimes the way they portray France is a little bit simplistic. So they portray France as inherently racist and Islamophobic. So I know that the evolutions that I just described tend to suggest that this is indeed the case, but I think it's important to not only portray France through the statements of its government or through the state of its media debate, which is incredibly poor and mediocre. And I think it's important to describe French people as a community of debate and to highlight the internal diversity among French people who are really debating over this issue. So our debates might look hysterical or irrational, but there is a real ability for dissent, for critique that is being exercised by many people in France, including the youth. There is incredible people among my students, or even you saw it recently when people went to a number of French high schools to interview the students, the pupils there. They are incredibly smart. They are so much smarter than the media commentators who are talking about Islam. They are listening to one another. They are open-minded. They are tolerant. And I think it's important to attend to the complexity of the French debate and to its historical roots. So I really welcome foreign scholars to do empirical research in France, on France.
Dr. Galanier, this was an eye-opening interview for me. We can't thank you enough for your time and for your thoughts. And we do sincerely hope that we can continue to support our colleagues in France. Merci beaucoup.
Merci à vous. Thank you very much, Youssef, for your highly relevant questions. I was very happy to participate in this discussion.